from deep inside your audio device of choice. Ladies and gentlemen, we're all very excited today. Herbie's excited because we have a new station on the ever-static Le Show Network. No static at all. WFHB, Bloomington, Indiana, home of the Le Show program. Welcome aboard, WFHB. Glad to have you with us, and all of your listeners, of course, or all of them who stayed up. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the week that the media finally decided, let's go.
Let's start right out. Hey, what happened?
There you go. This is the week that we finally stopped paying attention, or the media did, to the new book by Hillary Rodham Clinton. I guess she won now. At least the attention being paid stopped once we had been told how long the lines were to get in to see her at her bookstore appearances. So, winner or loser, crowd size is what counts. We also apparently gave Puerto Rico what it's been seeking for so long, independence from the United States, because the complete devastation of an entire island got as much attention late in the week, into the weekend, as it would have if it happened, you know, somewhere else. So I guess it is somewhere else. Congratulations to them all. And you know that in response to President Trump's tweets and comments about NFL players and NBA players and players. This just in, Colin Kaepernick will be taking a knee for the entire length of a game today. So that's exciting news. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia. A Saudi cleric, not a clerk, who said women should not drive because their brains shrink to a quarter the size of a man's when they go shopping, has been banned from preaching. See how free they are? Saad al-Hijri, he's head of fatwas, those are legal opinions, in Saudi Arabia's Asir governorate. I imagine that's a province or some sort of legal jurisdiction. He was suspended from all religious activity after advising against allowing women to drive during a speech that contained comments diminishing human value, according to a spokesman for the governor of Asir province. So now it's a province. Women remain banned from driving in Saudi Arabia, as you know. The ultra-conservative kingdom has some of the world's tightest restrictions for women. I like my women in tight restrictions, don't you? They're also bound by law to wear long robes and a headscarf and require the consent of a male guardian for most legal actions, including study, travel, and other activities. In a video this week, Hijri asked what the traffic department would do if it discovered a man with only half a brain. Would it give him a license or not? It would not, so how can it give it to women when she has only half, he said. You know, he's got a... No, he doesn't. If she goes to the market, she loses another half. What is left? A quarter. We demand the traffic department check because she's not suitable to drive, and she has only a quarter of a brain, I think he meant. Not. I don't think they use our change over there. Maybe they do. The comments sparked outrage on social media, which is hugely popular in Saudi Arabia. It's good news for everyone. Twitter users shared the video, many criticizing it and making jokes about his remarks. Some users posted pictures of Saudi female scientists and academics in response and questioned Hijri's own intellectual capacities. But there were many others who supported the cleric, and the hashtag #AljHijri is with the woman, not against her, was used on 20,000 tweets. His suspension, ordered by the provincial governor, was aimed at preventing the spread of views that spark controversy. See? Getting around, and do not serve the national interest, much like taking a knee. The Saudi government's modernizing reforms, backed by the business class, have sparked tensions with influential religious figures upon whose support the ruling family relies. Some clerics have millions of followers on social media. They are the equivalent of Saudi Kardashians. Our freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia, ladies and gentlemen, hello, welcome to the show. from New Orleans, Louisiana, right by, you know, right by the bayou. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. Straight from Vatican City this time, according to Reuters, Pope Francis, in some of his most candid and personal comments on the sexual abuse of children by priests, said this week the Catholic Church had, quote, arrived late in dealing with the problem. That's it. It was just a timing thing. Timing. Screw up the timing. You got no timing. But there's more. But wait, there's more. There's so much more. The Pope speaking in unscripted remarks. Well, see, that's what happens when you go off prompter. To a commission advising him on how to root out sexual abuse. Also acknowledged that early in his papacy, he'd made one bad call in being too lenient with an Italian priest, who later went bad again. He also said he decided to change current procedures for dealing with abusive priests. He's eliminating appeals trials in cases where there was definitive proof, as judged by Francis surprised members of the commission by putting aside his entire prepared speech and chatting to them, and not once mentioning Colin Kaepernick. Quote, there is the reality that the church arrived at the consciousness of these crimes a bit late, is the exact quote. Arrived at the consciousness of these crimes a bit late, ladies and gentlemen. Quote, when consciousness arrives late, the Pope continued, the means to resolve the problem also arrive late. The means to resolve the problems also arrive late. Means being a plural in this case, I guess. I am aware of this difficulty, but it is reality, and I say it plainly, quote, again and again, we arrived late, unquote. Church sexual abuse broke into widespread public notice in the United States, starting with reports of cases right here in Louisiana in 1984, and then went big time in 2002 when journalists in Boston found that bishops had systematically moved abusers to new posts instead of defrocking them, as depicted in a recent motion picture, Spotlight. Maybe the church was late in seeing Spotlight. Thousands of cases have come to light around the world as investigations have encouraged long silent victims to go public, shattering the church's reputation in places such as Ireland and Australia. And more than $2 billion has been paid in compensation to victims. There has been that whole Royal Commission in Australia thing for a while. Made the papers down there. The old practice of moving people around and not confronting the problem made consciences fall asleep. That's a quote from the Pope, or a quote from the Pope. Francis acknowledged that the commission, his commission, which was founded in 2014, had to, quote, swim against the tide, unquote, a reference to high-level defection from its ranks. A non-clerical member who was victim of priestly abuse when she was a child, Marie Collins of Ireland, quit in frustration earlier this year, citing a shameful lack of cooperation within the Vatican. Another former member of the commission, Peter Saunders of Britain, took a leave of absence last year, protesting a lack of progress. Francis said everyone has to realize that sexual abuse is a sickness with a high probability of relapse. That person may repent today, but may commit it again after 2 years. We have to put it into our heads that this is a sickness, he said. He says it would change current Vatican procedures to severely limit chances of appeal for pedophile priests convicted by church tribunals, saying they were often overly legalistic, allowing for reduced sentences on procedural grounds. Quote, I've decided to balance this out and say that if an abuse of a minor is proven, it is sufficient and there should be no recourse. If the proof is there, period, it's definitive, he said, unquote. Francis acknowledged this one bad judgment early in his papacy, way back in 2013, concerning an Italian priest, Mauro Inzoli. In that case, the Bishop of Crema had ruled that Inzoli would be removed from the public ministry while remaining a priest. A church tribunal ruled that he be defrocked. The Pope sided with the bishop. I was new in the papacy. I did not understand these things well and chose the more benevolent of the two sentences. But after 2 years, the priest had a relapse. I learned from this, unquote, Pope Francis. Arrived late, ladies and gentlemen. Church arrived late. News of the Godly, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. What's with the bees and the birds? A group of international scientists is meeting in Canada's national capital, Ottawa, to try to convince members of parliament there. There's no longer any doubt that common agricultural pesticides are toxic to ordinary honeybees. Very special honeybees, not so. In fact, says Jean-Marc Bonmatin, that's good morning in French, of the French National Center for Scientific Research, neonicotinoid pesticides kill a lot more than just bees. They pose a deadly risk to frogs, common birds, fish, and earthworms. Sounds like an ecology, doesn't it? The scientists represent a task force on pesticides within the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. Good luck with that. A couple years ago, that group released a comprehensive review of more than 1,100 peer-reviewed research studies on neonicotinoids. This week, they were releasing an update to the report and meeting with parliamentarians in Ottawa to make the case for an immediate ban on the pesticides. Neonics are nicotine-based pesticides. Well, nicotine's good for us. Why would it be bad? Commonly used by farmers to help keep everything from field crops to fruit orchards free of pests like aphids, spider mites, and stink bugs. Well, you don't want stink bugs, really, do you? I mean, we call them stink bugs, right? That's not to make them, you know, more attractive around the farm. After beekeepers started sounding alarm bells about mass deaths of honeybees, scientists began to zero in on neonics as one of the culprits. Bees were consuming pollen contaminated with the pesticides, as well as flying through chemical-laden clouds of dust from farm fields. But no stink bugs. Bees, said Bonmatin, were only the most visible part of the problem because beekeeping is a big business. And without bees, billions of dollars of farm crops would go unpollinated. What's he suggesting there? That we're dominated by thoughts of money? Why, I ought to. The French. Wild bees, invertebrates like earthworms, and amphibians like frogs, or frogs, have also shown signs of neonic poisoning, as have birds which eat neonic-coated seeds. Research suggests these pesticides can affect reproduction. No reproduction without the express consent of the National Football League, I don't think. Growth and movement for these species, as well as make them more susceptible to disease. Lisa Guy, a senior researcher with the David Suzuki Foundation, involved in the release of the updated report, said Canada has to catch up to Europe, which banned the use of neonics in crops which attract bees in 2013. Why you catch up to the United States, where you can use them all you want? You could catch up with us. France is currently phasing in a complete ban on all agricultural uses of neonics. The full ban is set to take effect next year. France's ambassador to Canada will explain the reasoning behind that. Canada did phase in limits on the use of neonics for corn and soybeans a couple years ago after a significant loss in bee populations. Quebec, or actually it was just the province of Ontario, Quebec proposed similar regulations this year. Vancouver and Montreal have banned neonics in their city limits. Not a lot of farming in their city limits, but, you know, gardeners. A year ago, Health Canada's Pest Management Agency said preliminary evidence from the study of imidacloprid, say it with me now, one of the three main neonics, showed it was present in toxic levels in surface and groundwater and killing aquatic insects that are a source of food for fish and birds. Let them eat cake. You said even if Health Canada decides next year to ban that pesticide, the phase isn't even scheduled to start until 2021. I hope regulators in Canada will see the report as a wake-up call, she said. Why, you're assuming that they're... Yes, you are. And yes, they are. The birds, the bees, the things, ladies and gentlemen. But now, there are theories abroad this particular day, this particular weekend, that President Trump went sort of nuclear on the whole subject of athletes, disinviting the Golden State Warriors to the White House, attacking the NFL players who take a knee during the playing of the Star Spangled Banner, urging they be fired by their owners. That he went on that tangent because he knew that the upcoming vote on the Graham Cassidy bill, the latest attempt at repeal and replace of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, was doomed to probable failure, that vote, if it comes to a vote at all. And so this was an exercise in what magicians call misdirection. Now look over here while the hand is moving the dollar bill over here. I would suggest that a similar theory might be floated for your consideration. We know this week that the fine people at Facebook have turned over some material to the Congress investigating the Russia thing on the ads purchased by some 400, I believe, accounts that Facebook, in its algorithmic wisdom, has decided were based in Russia. I believe they've also now turned over the content of those ads as well as the names of the accounts. What they haven't turned over, what has not surfaced in any of this discussion so far, is any data on the number of humans that have read any of these posts. Lest you say, oh, but retweets and likes, machines can be programmed to retweet and like the output of other machines. So is it machines talking to machines? Is Facebook making material available to Congress as a move of misdirection? What would they be misdirecting from? Let me read the trades for you. Scanning some advertising trades to get an answer to that question. That's what I'll be doing. Not for the children. Be doing it for you. First from Advertising Age. 2/3 of marketers surveyed January of this year said they're questioning their investment with Facebook. 40% of those saying they're planning to execute independent audits of the social media platform's audience and ad delivery. Facebook can't go whistling in the dark now, said Kevin Mannion, Chief Strategy Officer of Advertiser Perceptions. They need to take the lead in third-party verification of who's reading the ads. Digital advertising platforms can't assume that trust issues will blow over. No matter what is being said in meetings or from conference stages, the biggest ad buyers are clearly apprehensive, unquote. Advertising Perceptions said no one funded its survey of marketers, marketing executives. From Media Post. Facebook is claiming its ads manager can potentially reach 41 million people between the ages of 18 to 24 in the United States. But the Census Bureau only counted 31 million people in that cohort last year. Facebook says its ad tool could possibly reach 60 million 25 to 34s and 61 million 35 to 49s, even though the Census Bureau estimates there are only 45 million and 61 million of each group last year. This was spotted by Brian Weiser of Pivotal Research after reading about similar discrepancies in the Australian trade publication Ad News. Facebook has apparently been claiming a reach of 1.7 million more 16 to 39s than exist in Australia. We know, says Media Post's writer, Gavin O'Malley, that Facebook has a history of overstating some metrics and miscalculating others. Last year, the Association of National Advertisers said the fact that Facebook had overestimated video viewing for 2 years was, quote, troubling. For its part, Facebook blamed the issue on a bug. Not a stink bug, I hope. Those are the worst. But Facebook is sticking by its figures as to this recent discrepancy. Reach estimations are based on a number of factors, including Facebook user behaviors, user demographics, location data from devices, and other factors. They are designed to estimate how many people in a given area are eligible to see an ad a business might run. They're not designed to match population or census estimates, unquote. It's about eligibility, don't you know? Weiser says the gap between Facebook and census figures is not widely known in the industry. And from Adweek, influencer marketing, this is where you pay to promote your product through people who have big followings on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, has all the signs of a classic bubble, according to Adweek. Companies spent an estimated $570 million on sponsored Instagram posts alone last year. Most of that money, says Paul Johnson of Adweek, is going to waste. We analyzed thousands of branded influencer posts and found that while influencers may have a large number of followers, the typical Facebook post only reaches about 3 to 8% of that audience, Instagram being only slightly higher, the range between 8 to 18%. Because so much content is being published on these platforms, the algorithms behind Facebook and Instagram filter out much of the content that isn't directly relevant to the user, which may include the posts you spent a lot of money on. The other problem with influencer marketing is that with opportunity comes fraud. As splashy headlines tout what a lucrative industry influencer marketing is, many people want to become influencers in an attempt to score a brand payout. This includes a whole cottage industry built around fake influencer accounts and buying bot followers to make those profiles look more impressive. But no, look at the Russia thing. By the way, speaking of which, way down in a story in the Daily Beast this week, as Facebook turned over the data to Congress, a Facebook executive said they were unable to specify any particular ads that commented on candidates in the recent presidential election. Misdirection. She eligible for consideration in the Miss America contest? I don't know, but it's not just another question that occurs to me when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, too safe to meet.
I didn't know Atoms had sabbaticals, but apparently Addie the Atom is off on one. Or on off one. Plans to remove fuel rods from two spent fuel pools at the Fook No. 1 plant are going to be delayed by up to 3 years because of difficulties in clearing debris and reducing radiation levels. Just a couple of little things. The government and plant operator Tokyo Electric Power originally expected to start emptying the storage pools at the No. 1 and No. 2 reactor buildings in fiscal 2020. Why, you can see that from here. But they plan to move the starting time to 23 in their first review in 2 years, of the roadmap for decommissioning the stricken nuclear plant. The revised roadmap. Can you revise a roadmap? I thought the highway just sort of was where it was. A survey of the upper levels of the two reactor buildings where the storage pools are located found debris piled up in a much more complicated way than initially envisioned. Sounds like my den. That will lengthen the time needed to clear the debris that follows as night the day. thus delaying the removal of the fuel rods. In addition, radiation levels remain extremely high inside the buildings. Well, who could have expected that when there's a meltdown? We thought by now, you know, something would have happened to the radiation. How would they have estimated that it would start 3 years? The number one reactor storage pool holds 392 nuclear fuel assemblies. Number two reactor's pool has 615 assemblies. So number two wins. Work to remove the total of the 566 assemblies from number three reactor pool is scheduled to begin in the middle of next year as originally planned, assuming those radiation levels go down. The three reactors, as you know, melted down in 2011. The review of the decommissioning roadmap is also expected to revise the target of starting the removal of melted nuclear fuel and debris in the three reactors in 2021. That's going to be changed to aiming to start the removal in 2021. If they were down south, they'd say fixing to start the removal, but they're not. The government and TEPCO will maintain the goal of completing the decommissioning in 20 to 40 years. You're giving yourself some wiggle room there. Hey, I'll meet you for a drink down at the wiggle room right after the show. Dateline Chiba, Japan. A district court there ordered TEPCO, the aforementioned Tokyo Electric Power Company, this week to pay $3.3 million U.S. in compensation to evacuees of the Fukushima nuclear disaster, but absolved the central government of responsibility. 45 people in 18 households who evacuated following the meltdown had sought about 10 times more money from TEPCO and the government. About 30 similar lawsuits involving 12,000 plaintiffs have been filed at district courts around Japan. That'll keep the Japanese lawyers busy. The ruling at Chiba District Court was the second so far. In March, another court found both TEPCO and the government responsible for the nuclear disaster, and that was compensation about a tenth the amount in this case. The main point of the lawsuit was whether TEPCO and the government could have foreseen a towering tsunami hitting the Fuk plant and taken measures to prevent the disaster. The plaintiffs emphasized a long-term appraisal released by the government way back in 2002, which estimated a 20% possibility of a magnitude 8 level earthquake occurring between the coast off the Sunrico region and in that whole area within the next 30 years. The plaintiffs argued this appraisal shows it was possible to forecast a tsunami off the coast from the Fuk plant, and the measures could have been taken even as late as 2006 to prevent the disaster. A seismologist provided testimony on behalf of the plaintiffs. Kinikiho Shimazaki, professor emeritus at University of Tokyo, also served as a deputy chairman of the Nuclear Regulation Authority. He compiled, or was in charge of compiling, the 2002 long-term appraisal. The height of a likely tsunami could have been known if it was calculated based on that appraisal. Even if a specific forecast could not be made, some sort of countermeasure could have been taken, he testified. The defendants argued the long-term appraisal did not provide a specific basis for predicting a tsunami. You didn't tell us when it was going to happen. Sounds like Al-Qaeda determined to attack U.S. Presidential Daily Brief, August 2001. Dateline Tokyo, Japan's nuclear watchdog has ordered the Japanese arm of Amazon and two other companies to suspend the sales of products containing radioactive tritium, our old friend tritium, in excess of the legally allowable limit. Tom Brokaw, ladies and gentlemen.
The legally allowable limit.
Thank you, Tom. Amazon and the two companies sold keychains and compasses containing tritium. That is, as you know, if you've been a long-time listener to Tom.
A long-time listener.
To this program, a radioactive isotope of hydrogen without reporting it to the watchdog. That's a violation of the radiation hazard prevention law. There have been no reports of damage so far. The watchdog also ordered the three companies to retrieve the products that were already sold. The products contained tritium 4 to 11 times higher than the legally allowable limit.
The legally allowable limit.
Of one?
1 billion becquerel.
Becquerels. Electrons emitted by tritium are used to generate a glow in such products through interaction with a fluorescent substance.
A fluorescent glow.
Mm-hmm. The companies are currently retrieving the 15 keychains and a compass that were manufactured in China and the United States, respectively. Something was manufactured in the United States, and it's radioactive. What are you going to do? Where are the jobs? Clean, cheap, too radioactive to meter. Our friend the atom.
out here, out where it shines, where I almost feel right, where I almost look right, 'cause it's all blue skies, and yet I'm waiting for storm clouds. God knows I do what I can, try to make the noise stop, but I can hear a shoe drop, and suddenly I'm back in my place, Sinn Féin, and believing that the rain is gonna fall on me. Oh, the rain is gonna fall on me. The rain is gonna fall on me again. You fool, hiding from the sun, haven't you learned that life is both skies, 'cause no one moves on by looking backwards. Things might end, but others begin. Well, there's no need to do your rain dance. Just give in and live. Someday I live in the sun, with no one to begrudge me, I won't even judge me, I'll beat my drum, let the storm clouds come out, I'll smile and shout at them, let it rain.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show. Well, President Trump has more to worry about, supposedly, reportedly, supposedly. Hey, OJ getting out? No, next week, week after. I'm making plans. I'm reminded of that by the word supposedly. President Trump has more to worry about in the ongoing investigation by Special Counsel Robert Mueller, apparently. Mueller has subpoenaed or asked for a whole boatload of documents, of conversations from the White House. There was also that fairly shocking pre-dawn raid at the home of former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort, conducted by FBI agents with warrant. I hope. Yeah, they had a warrant. And speaking of warrants, there were two FISA warrants from the Foreign Intelligence Court, the secret court. Shh, I didn't say that. Authorizing wiretapping of Paul Manafort once before Trump was even a candidate. So this was about something else, maybe. And once last year, I believe. The reporting is indicating that the noose is tightening around Paul Manafort, the former campaign manager of the Trump campaign for about 3 months last year, who has a long and storied career in Washington lobbying circles, once partnered with dirty trickster, self-proclaimed dirty trickster, and sometime Trump advisor Roger Stone in a lobbying firm, has represented a lot of foreign countries and leaders of foreign governments, including the previous regime in Ukraine, which was more friendly toward the Russians than the current regime, but also other countries with less than democratic leaders, you might say. So it just raises the question. It doesn't beg the question. It raises the question. Manafort had an office in Trump Tower. So Trump supporters are saying, see, there was wiretapping in Trump Tower. In any case, it does raise the question, as I say, is there still wiretapping of Manafort's phone and maybe even of his voicemail?
Hi, this is Paul Manafort, Chief Executive Officer of Houndstooth and Driven Snow Associates. I can't come to the phone right now because I'm engaged in some perfectly legal activities, but please leave a message with your name, number, and if you're a foreign autocrat, I can reach you on weekends. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Paul. This is John Miller. John Barron also works for me, but this is John Miller calling. And I'm calling on behalf of President Trump, who, as you know, I know you know, for obvious reasons, legal being only the first and best of them, the president can't talk to you right now. For one thing, he's extremely busy this weekend drafting a very important tweet exposing LeBron James. So he's asked me to leave this message for you. Paul, all of us here at the White House know that you're under great, great pressure right now. Very tough. Very tough. And it's from a guy I should have fired by now, and not that I can, because I'm only the president's special spokesperson, but still, he, the president, wants you to know just how extremely highly he thinks of you these days, how terrifically grateful he is for what our lawyers now remind us is your very, very brief involvement in last year's historic campaign, one of which we were never supposed to win, according to the fake news. There's nothing I can say on the president's behalf, or anything he could say on his own behalf, if he was here instead of in the other room, to try to influence you, your behavior, in any way, shape, or form now, or in any universe yet to be discovered. Read that. But, and I guess this thing is going to keep recording, which is so good because I hate to have to redial this call. Everything goes through the switchboard now, which is a whole other thing, thanks to the great General Kelly, who, by the way, is one of the great generals ever. But, so, Paul, we know corrupt Bob Mueller wants to flip you or flop you or whatever the lawyers call it. I don't know. The president talks to the lawyers. I don't. And maybe it's a good idea. Maybe you did something, you know, a little bit on the shady side with some investors or some dictators years ago. Who knows? So they send you to some country club jail for a year or two, and I hear the minimum security federal prisons are almost as nice as some of the non-Trump hotels, frankly. And then, you know, some good things could happen. But obviously, Paul, you know as well as I do that whatever you say, good things could happen, but because that's life. and bad things could happen, too, you know, all the time. Look at the Caribbean. So, look, I have more spokesman stuff to do. If you want to talk, call Sarah's office. Ask for John Barron. Did I say Barron? I mean Miller. And I can't say whatever you need because, of course, only the president can say that, right? I mean, who knows what that guy will say? It's amazing. Anyway, Paul, think it over. Remember, corrupt Mueller could still get fired, you know? So maybe you don't want to make a deal with a guy who's not there, tomorrow, right? Believe me. Okay, Paul, Great leaving a message for you. Have the most wonderful day ever.
Open up the window, see the AC, free from the grips of the humidity. Time to trade your shorts for jeans. It's autumn in New Orleans. Just like the springtime without the bugs. Breeze is as gentle as grandma's hugs. Streets start filling up with tourists and teens. Autumn in New Orleans. Saints back playing, Magnolia swaying, shaking off the last spring's beans. Party time beginning, Saints keep winning. Who knows where this thing leads? Second line starts snaking up and down the street. Glove hands clapping to the dancing feet. Friday night fish fries, white limousines, autumn in New Orleans.
Out
balling, duck blinds calling, darkness make a swift return. Ghosts to a romancing, in your start dancing. Soon enough the bonfires burn. So goodbye to grilling, in those is willing. Fix up a mess of red beans. Welcome back to autumn, to old New Orleans. Old New Orleans.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Well, we got a few. Yeah, we do. The France-based producer of Netflix's children cartoon Maya and the Bee apologized Friday for killing the bee. No, for a drawing of a penis that appeared in an episode of the animated series. The episode was scrubbed from the streaming service earlier this week after an alert mom noticed the image, clearly visible in a scene from season one, and pointed it out on social media. Producer said, "The origin of this image obviously results from a very bad joke from one of the 150 artists working on the production. They're looking for the culprit among the artists in France and Asia who worked on the series." The studio apologizes. And does Netflix. Dateline Mexico City, a Mexican Navy official has apologized for confusion over reports. Those reports, you may remember, that a 12-year-old girl was trapped alive after a Mexico City school collapsed in the wake of that magnitude 7.1 earthquake. Those reports had riveted Mexicans pulling for an uplifting rescue. Rescue workers said Wednesday they believed they'd made contact with the girl trapped in the rubble at the school. For more than a day, rescuers told reporters they were trying to reach and free the girl, efforts that were shown live on television. But by Thursday afternoon, Navy official Angel Enrique Sarmiento said all the school's children had been accounted for and there was no student known to be in the rubble. Deputy Navy Secretary Sarmiento followed up with an apology Thursday night. "I want to make it very clear the information the Mexican public received about the existence of a girl who was alive underneath the rubble was released by the Navy based on the technical reports. I offer the Mexican public an apology for the information disseminated Thursday afternoon, where I affirmed that I did not have details about a supposed child survivor in this tragedy." Sarmiento did not provide details about why officials are leaving open the possibility of finding someone else alive in the collapsed school. So keep those cameras running. A presentation by Friday Night Lights and Northern Exposure actress Janine Turner upset some Dallas school parents because their children were given material about sex trafficking and abortion. Ugh. The actress spoke at Eubanks Intermediate School, named for Bob, really? No, to discuss the U.S. Constitution and patriotism. She's the founder of a group which she says is nonpartisan, aimed at promoting civic engagement. The organization promotes conservative ideas on its website. According to the Dallas News, parents became concerned after learning their 5th and 6th grade children were given copies of a political petition as well as materials that discuss legislation about helping sex trafficking victims and limiting abortion funding. Turner spoke with students September 12th in the school gym while she was wrapped in a floor-length American flag jacket, which, of course, is a violation of the flag code. The school district sent parents a letter apologizing about the children receiving content inappropriate for their age. Nothing about the flag code. Flag has a code. A DeKalb, Georgia County middle school teacher is apologizing to her students and their parents after the music teacher sent 6th graders home with an assignment filled with explicit lyrics. Benicia Williams was removed from the classroom by DeKalb County Schools. Williams has issued an apology to parents that reads, "At no time should students be subjected to this type of language at impressionable ages. Regardless of my best intentions, I failed miserably. I should have used better judgment." The assignment featured lyrics from rapper Kodak Black. Students were tasked with taking expletive-laden, violent, and sexually suggestive lyrics and coming up to replacing them with something more positive. DeKalb County Superintendent called the assignment inappropriate, unacceptable, and contrary to the district's standards. "I accept full responsibility for my actions," said Williams, the teacher. And is sorry. Instagram, home of those fine influencers, used a user's image, yes, a user using a user, which included the text, "I will rape you before I kill you, you filthy whore," to advertise its service on Facebook. This is the latest example of social media algorithms boosting offensive content, apparently. Guardian reporter Olivia Solon recently discovered that Instagram, owned by Facebook, made an ad out of a photo she had posted of a violent threat she received in an email, which said, "Olivia, you F bitch, and I will rape you," unquote. Instagram selected the screenshot, which she posted a year ago, to advertise the photo-sharing platform to Solon's sister this week with the message, "See Olivia Solon's photo and posts from friends on Instagram." The ad has surfaced at a time when Facebook is facing intense scrutiny over the ethical failings of its algorithms. Last week, ProPublica reported Facebook was allowing advertisers to target users interested in the topic of Jew hater, and how to burn Jews, categories the social media site had automatically created. Facebook Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg issued a mea culpa, said the company is changing its policies as a result. Facebook targeted disabled the targeting system. The Instagram spokesperson apologized and claimed the image was not used in a paid promotion. We're sorry this happened. It's not the experience we want someone to have. This notification post was surfaced as part of an effort to encourage engagement on Instagram. Posts are generally received by a small percentage of a person's Facebook friends, unquote. The spokesperson said these types of posts were designed to motivate people who aren't on Instagram or who hadn't been on the site lately to visit the platform by showing them content from their friends. The company didn't answer questions about how widely the post was shared. It said it would have surfaced to some of Solon's Facebook friends. We just want you to have a nice experience. So do I. Ryanair's, this is a budget European airline, its chief executive apologized to shareholders and customers this week, looking to staunch criticism over the cancellation of more than 2,100 flights after it scheduled too many pilots for vacation. The budget airline, known for ultra-low prices that it combines with charging for airport check-in and reissuing a boarding pass, has faced a wave of customer anger over its move to cancel flights over a six-week period this and next month. The move affects about 315,000 customers flying through airports across Europe. This is a time of distress and anger for many passengers whose flights are due in the next week, said a consumer advocate. But the airline's chief executive, Michael O'Leary, it's an Irish airline, apologized to investors and passengers affected by the move at the company's annual general meeting. Ryanair blamed a failure within its pilot rostering function. How's your rostering function, ladies and gentlemen, for the cancellations, and said 95% of its customers impacted would receive new travel arrangements or refunds approved by the end of the week. This is a mess of our own making, Mr. O'Leary said. Former covert CIA agent and current Santa Fe, New Mexico resident Valerie Plame Wilson took heat this week for sharing an article via Twitter that some called anti-Semitic, according to the Albuquerque Journal. She eventually apologized. I'm not perfect and make mistakes, she tweeted, calling this error a doozy. The fight started when she shared an article called America's Jews Are Driving America's Wars from blogging site The Uns Review, which has been described by the Anti-Defamation League as a popular source for anti-Semites because of its anti-Israel rhetoric. Slew of replies, some people calling Plame Wilson herself anti-Semitic. I'm not perfect and make mistakes. This was a doozy. All I can do is admit them, try to be better, and read more thoroughly next time. Ugh, Plame Wilson tweeted. Equifax linked people to a fake online site that mimicked the link for its site on its massive September 7th security breach. The company employee directed people to a fake site that flipped the name of the site and sent people to a similar appearing site. I've used the word site too often now. Equifax apologized for the mistake. All posts using the wrong link have been taken down. MSNBC's Lawrence O'Donnell has apologized for his outburst, his stop the hammering outburst. He says, a better anchorman and a better person would have had a better reaction to technical difficulties. I'm sorry. Kevin Durant has apologized for tweeting against his former team, the Golden State Warriors. And the National Enquirer and sister publication, the National Examiner, has withdrawn articles saying that Judge Judy suffered from brain disease and sincerely apologized, apparently, on lawyer's instructions. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations on NPR worldwide throughout Europe, on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via WBCQ, the shortwave giant, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on the equally mighty Soho Radio in London. On the internet, live and archived at two locations, harryshearer.com and kcsn.org. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com and as a free podcast, we're available at Sideshow Network, SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn.com, and WWNO.org. And be just like taking a knee for the whole day, if you'd agree to join me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile in Hawaii desks. Thanks as always to Pam Halstead and to Jenny Lawson for the last time here at WWNO New Orleans. We're going to miss you, darling, for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program, a playlist of the music heard here on, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts, all at harryshearer.com. And I'm on Twitter at the Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO, New Orleans' flagship station for the Changes Easy Radio Network. So long from the Crescent City.